for no other reason than that they were weak or trustful. Aboard a ship like the Santiago, there was every opportunity to commit murder, but very little chance of doing it in a way which would avoid detection. Nonetheless, Skye's fertile imagination had brooded on this problem long enough to have thought up a dozen plausible strategies for reducing the number of his enemies. But until Clown had spoken to him now, it had been enough to entertain the fantasies, playing those gruesome little deaths over and over in his mind, slowly embroidering them, had been sufficient reward for him. Clown was right, though. What was the point of drafting elaborate blueprints in painstaking detail, if one, at some point, did not begin the business of building? He looked at Balcazar again. So peaceful, as Clown had said. So peaceful. And so vulnerable. Chapter 23. It could have been worse. I could have hit the ground without hitting the mulch first, without first punching through two layers of festering, skeletally framed dwellings and stalls. When the car came to a stop, it was pitched nose down in semi-darkness. Faint lights and fires burned around me. I could hear raised voices, but they sounded more excited and angry than hurt, and I dared to hope that no one had been crushed by my arrival. After a few seconds I eased myself from the seat, quickly appraising my condition. I found nothing obviously broken, although everything that could have been broken was at least bruised. Then I climbed back up the length of the car, hearing the voices approach and agitated scrabbling sounds which might have been curious children picking through the wreckage, or the noises of disturbed rats. I grabbed the weapon, checking I still had the currency I had taken from Zebra, then left the vehicle, stepping onto a precarious bamboo platform which had been neatly punctured by the car's nose. "Can you hear me?" I called into the darkness. "Certain someone could. I'm not your enemy. I'm not from the canopy. These are mendicant clothes. I'm an off-worlder. I need your help very urgently. The canopy people are trying to kill me." I said it in Norte. It would carry a lot more conviction than if I'd spoken Canadian, the language of the Chasm City aristocracy. "Put down the weapon, then, and start explaining how you came by it." It was a man's voice, accented differently from the canopy dwellers I had met. His words were imprecise, as if there was something wrong with his palate. He spoke Norte, too, but it sounded faltering, or perhaps over-precise, without the ritual elisions which come from true familiarity. He continued, "You arrived in a cable car as well. That will also require explanation." I could see the man now, standing on the edge of the bamboo platform. But he wasn't a man at all. I was looking at a pig. He was small and pale-skinned, and he stood on his hind legs with the same awkward ease that I remembered from the other pigs. Goggles occluded his eyes, held in place by strands of leather tied around the back of his head. He wore a red poncho. In one trotter-fingered hand, he held a cleaver with the kind of casual dexterity which suggested he used it professionally, and had long since ceased to be intimidated by its sharpness. I didn't put down the weapon, not immediately. "My name is Tanner Mirabel," I said. "I arrived from Sky's Edge yesterday. I was looking for someone and wandered into the wrong part of the mulch by mistake. I was captured by a man called Waverly and forced to take part in the game."
"And you managed to escape with a gun like that and a cable car. Quite a trick for a newcomer, Tanner Mirabel."
He spoke my name as if it were an oath. "I'm wearing mendicant clothes," I said, "and as you'll have noticed, my accent is that of someone from Sky's Edge. I speak a little Canadian."